Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
We're back. Paul J. McSorley here. Chilling Tales for Dark Nights presents to you, dear listeners, Fear from the Heartland. Season 6, Episode 1 will air January 1, 2025. This will be a monthly anthology, airing the first Wednesday of each month. So, let's get after it.
It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling Tales for Dark Nights.
Good evening, friends, and welcome to another unforgettable night of terror on Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. I'm your host, Steve Taylor, here to guide you through an evening of spine-tingling tales that will remind you that sometimes it's better not to ask what's hiding in the shadows. Before we begin, remember that you can show your support by giving us a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening. If you're joining us on YouTube, be sure to give this video a thumbs up, leave a comment, and hit that subscribe button and bell icon to stay updated on all of our new releases. And for those who want more, visit ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com to become a patron and enjoy our content ad-free. Your support means the world to us. Thank you. Now, sit back, relax, if you dare, and let's turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Our first story tonight, by Henry Hallmark, takes us into the seemingly mundane world of suburban life. But as Natalia discovers, even the safest spaces can become sinister. Performed by Heather Ordover, featuring Jeff Sturtevant, and a trio of children by the names of Aiden, Logan, and Evan, I present to you, My Closet is Trying to Kill Me.
Look, I'm not saying my closet is haunted. I'm just saying, there's no logical explanation for what's been happening. It started the week we moved into the new house. Kelvin and I found this place during one of those spontaneous, we need a bigger place before we go insane moments, and it felt perfect. Nice neighborhood, big yard, enough space to contain our three feral sons, Isaiah, Miles, and Cody, who treat drywall like it is their personal canvas. And a master bedroom with the walk-in closet of my dreams. When I saw it, I had visions. Organized bliss, clothes arranged by season, color-coded. Kelvin's old high school jerseys hung neatly. My dresses breathing on hangers instead of suffocating in bins. This was going to be my thing. A clean, organized closet. A sanctuary of adulting. Kelvin, of course, couldn't care less about hangers.
Hangers are just a way to procrastinate folding,
he muttered the first time I tried to organize his stuff. And don't even get me started on the kids. I could hang their clothes like a superhero, and they'd still dump everything into a clean-ish pile on their bedroom floors within 24 hours.
Why do we have to have hangers at all, Mom?
Isaiah asked once.
Folding is easier.
Because this family needs structure, I said. But nobody in this house understands structure. So fine, the closet was going to be mine alone. The one corner of the universe I could control. Or so I thought. It started small. The first day we moved in, I hung up all my clothes, so proud of myself, and went to bed feeling accomplished. Only when I walked into my closet the next morning, the shelves had collapsed. Just bam, every single rod pulled clean out of the drywall. Dresses, sweaters, shoes all crumpled in an angry heap on the floor.
Babe,
Kelvin said, poking his head around the doorframe as I cursed under my breath.
You have too much stuff. You know these prefab racks can't handle all that.
They're supposed to, I grumbled. So we spent an entire Saturday patching the drywall, building new racks, and reinstalling everything. I didn't let it deter me. See? I said as I hammered the final bracket into place. Good as new. I shouldn't have said that. The closet heard me. I swear, it heard. The next collapse happened a week later. This time, it wasn't a slow buckle. It was an explosion. Kelvin was sitting on the bed scrolling his phone when the crash came from the closet, like the whole room had tried to eat itself. We rushed over and we found the shelves dangling from their brackets, my clothes, in another tragic heap on the ground. This time, the rod had actually punched a hole through the drywall. I stood there numb, trying to comprehend how physics had betrayed me.
Maybe if you kept, 10% of your wardrobe?
Kelvin suggested helpfully. I shot him a look that could melt tungsten. This is sabotage, I whispered. Kelvin chuckled.
Sabotage by drywall?
No, I muttered darkly. By the closet. Kelvin didn't get it. He thought I was being dramatic. He didn't see the gleam of malevolence hiding behind those louvered doors, but I knew. Something was off about that closet. It didn't just dislike my clothes, it hated them. And by association, it hated me. We kept patching holes and installing new shelves. It became a routine, like the world's least exciting home improvement show. And every time it happened, Kelvin became more exasperated.
Natalia,
he said one afternoon while spackling yet another drywall crater.
You're obsessed. Just fold your clothes like a normal person.
It's not about the clothes, I said through gritted teeth. It's the principle. The closet is supposed to work, damn it. Kelvin threw his hands up.
You're giving this closet way too much power.
He had no idea. Things got worse. It started with little incidents, small, sneaky things designed to undermine my sanity. A hanger would snap in my hand for no reason. The door would jam, refusing to open until I was nearly late for work. At one point, I found my favorite pair of boots inside a laundry basket I was sure I hadn't touched. Then it got violent. The first real attack happened on a rainy Thursday night. I was home alone with the kids, Kelvin was working late, when I decided to reorganize the closet. Again, I had just finished hanging up my winter coats when the entire rod catapulted off the wall and slammed into my shoulder. It hurt like hell. I staggered backward, clutching my arm, while the boys stared at me from the hallway.
"Mom's wrestling the closet again,"
Miles whispered.
"Do you need help?"
Isaiah asked, not moving a muscle. "No," I hissed. "I've got it." But as I picked up the rod, I could feel it. That closet wanted me dead. The next attempt was even worse. A week later, I was crouching inside trying to screw a loose bracket back onto the wall when the door slammed shut on its own and hit me square in the temple. The impact knocked me off balance, and for a second, I thought I might pass out. When I told Kelvin about it later, he gave me that look. The one that says, "You're overreacting, but I'm too scared to say it."
"It was probably the wind," he said.
"There's no wind in a closet, Kelvin." I could tell he didn't believe me, but I knew the closet was trying to kill me, and no amount of rationalization could convince me otherwise. The breaking point came on a Sunday morning. Kelvin had taken the boys out, leaving me with a few blessed hours of peace. Naturally, I decided to tackle the closet again, because clearly, I have a death wish.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
I had just finished hanging everything up perfectly. Racks secured, hangers aligned, clothes separated by season, when I heard it. A creaking sound, the kind of sound wood makes right before it decides to betray you. I turned just in time to see the entire upper shelf give way. It happened in slow motion, like a scene from a disaster movie. The rod ripped out of the wall with a sickening crunch, and a cascade of sweaters and dresses came crushing down. I tried to dodge it, but the avalanche of fabric engulfed me, knocking me flat on my back. For a second, I just lay there, gasping for breath under 50 pounds of aggressively folded sweatshirts. "Really?" I muttered, staring at the ceiling. "This is how I die?" Kelvin found me like that an hour later. He stood in the doorway, arms crossed, clearly trying not to laugh.
"What happened, Natalia?"
he asked, pulling me out from beneath the rubble. "The closet and I had a mild argument," I replied sarcastically, savoring the first full breath I had managed in what felt like forever.
"And the closet won?"
he said, shaking his head. "Don't," I warned him, as I wiggled free of the fabric tomb. After that, I refused to go near the closet. I started leaving my clothes in baskets and folding them just to avoid another incident. But the closet wasn't satisfied. It wanted blood. The last straw came a few days later. I was brushing my teeth, minding my own business, when I heard a loud snap from the bedroom. I walked in just in time to see the closet door fling itself open and a rogue hanger shoot out like a spear, narrowly missing my carotid artery. I stood there, toothbrush in hand, shocked but not surprised. "That's it," I whispered. "You want a fight? You've got one." Kelvin thought I was crazy when I told him we needed to call an exorcist.
It's a closet, Natalia,
he said.
Just take the doors off and be done with it.
But I know the truth. This closet isn't just bad carpentry. It's evil. And it's personal. For now, I've surrendered. My clothes are folded. The closet remains empty. Waiting. But one day, I'll hang something up again, and when I do, I'll be ready. Because the next time this closet tries to kill me, it's coming with me. After the hangar incident, Kelvin didn't take me seriously.
You're being dramatic,
he said in the tone husbands use when dealing with things they think aren't a big deal, but totally are.
It's just a closet.
Just a closet? I repeated, my voice climbing into banshee territory. Kelvin, it tried to impale me with a hanger. That's attempted murder. He pinched the bridge of his nose.
How many times do I have to tell you? If we just fold things...
I will die on this hill, I snapped. He gave me the look, the fine, whatever look that means he's given up engaging, and somehow I'm still the crazy one. Meanwhile, my enemy crouched in the corner of our bedroom, lurking silently behind those bifold doors. I could feel its smugness. The worst part? I could tell this whole closet debacle was driving a wedge between Kelvin and me. Not that our marriage was falling apart or anything. No. We weren't there. Yet. But if a divorce attorney ever asked why we split, I'd have to say, well, you see, the closet tried to assassinate me and my husband sided with the drywall. Marriage is hard, people. As if dealing with this closet's vendetta wasn't enough, the kids didn't make things easier. Miles, my middle son, was the first to catch on that the closet was a point of tension between mom and dad, and boy, did he run with it.
Mom thinks the closet's alive,
he told Isaiah and Cody at dinner.
Like in that movie with the killer tires.
That's a tire, I muttered, and the movie is called Rubber. Isaiah, the eldest, nodded sagely.
Maybe the closet has a spirit attached to it, you know, from one of those creepy furniture stores.
Cody, bless his tiny heart, piped up with,
Does the closet eat people?
No, I said, pinching the bridge of my nose, mirroring Kelvin without realizing it. Not yet. This, of course, only inspired them to make closet-themed jump scares around the house. Every 5 minutes, someone would leap out from behind a door shouting, I'm the closet! Cody even drew a picture of me getting squashed by a shelf and proudly taped it to the fridge. It was titled, Mom vs. Closet. The Final Battle. Hilarious. If I were a rational person, I'd seek professional help, but how do you explain to a therapist that your closet has been trying to murder you without sounding like a nutcase? Hi, Dr. Perkins, it's me, Natalia. You know, same old, same old. The anxiety's fine, kids are thriving. Oh, except the closet in my room is homicidal. Yeah, that's a fast track to getting 5150'd. Kelvin, for the record, suggested therapy.
You need to talk this out with someone who isn't married to you,
he said one evening. I'm not crazy, I told him as calmly as a woman could while swearing vengeance on inanimate objects. A few days later, it happened again. I was innocently walking into the closet to grab a clean shirt, and then wham, the top shelf gave way, sending a basket full of mismatched socks crashing into my head. I stumbled backward. I fell on my ass. I lay there, buried in laundry and self-loathing. Kelvin found me, again, on the floor, tangled in t-shirts, underwear, and existential despair.
Did you ever think,
he asked, dragging me to my feet,
that maybe the closet isn't trying to kill you? Maybe you just have too much stuff?
That's victim blaming, Kelvin. He sighed the kind of sigh that men reserve for situations they know they won't win. By now I was desperate. if I didn't take action, this closet would succeed in wiping me off the face of the earth. And Kelvin would be left explaining my death to the police with, "She really liked sweaters." I considered hiring a handyman, but what was I supposed to say? "Hi, could you install ghost-proof racks in my closet?" I could already imagine the way he would describe me to his fellow contractors. "Nice lady, but maybe cursed. Would not recommend." So, I did what any sane person would do. I Googled closet exorcisms. Spoiler, there aren't many. I found some dubious websites suggesting sage bundles and chanting, but that felt too Gwyneth Paltrow for me. Instead, I decided to confront the closet head on. Kelvin, of course, kept acting like I was the problem. One day, after another shelf gave out and I spent 2 hours cleaning up the aftermath, he walked in and said, in the way only husbands do,
"Maybe if you just fold your clothes, this wouldn't happen."
That's when I saw red. "You think this is about folding clothes?" I hissed. He gave me that infuriating shrug, the one where he doesn't even say anything, but the implication is, this is all your fault. And before I knew what I was doing, I grabbed a hanger off the floor, snapped it open, and lunged at him. Kelvin's eyes widened as I tried to loop the cheap plastic hanger around his neck.
Are you serious right now?"
he gasped, backpedaling toward the bed. "Yes, I am dead serious," I grunted, fighting to keep the hanger from slipping from my hand. "If the closet is going to kill me, I'm taking you with me." We wrestled like two idiots in a low-budget wrestling match. Me, determined to make a point. Kevin, flailing in disbelief. And the hanger, bending in ways no hanger should. Like the lamest clue weapon ever.
"You can't choke me with a hanger?"
he shouted, clutching at the flimsy plastic.
"This is like that scene from Amityville. But you replaced the murderous dad with Martha Stewart."
"The only reason you're still alive is because it was made in China," I shouted back, panting with exertion. The hanger gave an audible crack and snapped clean in two. I stood there, holding the useless halves in each hand, gasping for breath, while Kelvin laid sprawled across the bed, glaring at me like I'd lost my mind. We both stared at the broken pieces in silence. "Damn it. I really wanted you dead," I muttered, tossing the fragments onto the nightstand. "Frickin' communist garbage." Kelvin sat up, smoothing his ruffled hair.
"You need help," he said, deadpan.
"No," I replied, still catching my breath. "What I need are American-made hangers." Since that incident, we've both agreed to a truce. I've stopped trying to strangle my husband with a shoddy foreign-made product, and he stopped mentioning folding. The closet? Oh, it's still there. Watching. Waiting. I've avoided it for the past 2 weeks. My clothes are folded, well, most of them. The closet seems satisfied. For now. But one day, I know I'll have to hang something again. And when I do, I'll be ready. Next time, I'll buy metal hangers. Heavy duty. American steel. Because if the closet's coming for me, I'm taking everyone down with it.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
The That was My Closet Is Trying to Kill Me by Henry Hallmark. Who knew a walk-in closet could turn into a walk-in nightmare? A big thank you to Heather Ordover, Jeff Sturtevant, and our young performers, Aiden, Logan, and Evan, for bringing this darkly comedic tale to life. And listener, if you enjoyed the darkly comedic annex of tonight's author, you'll find more of his work in previous episodes of this show, as well as on creepypastastories.com. Just search for him by name. That's Henry Hallmark, like the greeting card company, but focused more on hauntings and hilarity than on Christmas sweaters and storybook endings. On behalf of tonight's featured authors, thank you for your support. Now, back to the action. Your closets, dear listeners, may be behaving themselves for now, but don't relax just yet. Our next tale takes us far from the comforts of home and into the Alaskan wilderness, where danger lurks, not only in the icy cold, but in the shadows of the supernatural. Up next, Claver thought she was just searching for her missing professor in the Alaskan wilderness. But as she delves deeper into the frigid landscape, she'll discover something far darker than she could have ever imagined. Without further ado, as performed by Danielle Hewitt and featuring Kevin Barbary and yours truly, Steve Taylor, this is The Wolf and the Raven by Tobias Wade.
My name is Sarah Claver, and I'm supposed to be at home in Wisconsin, working on my dissertation for my biology degree. Instead, I'm freezing my ass off in a dive bar in Alaska, almost a week into the hunt for my PhD advisor, Robert Olsky. It's not my fault there isn't an internet connection in the remote village he hid away in. I tried to be accommodating by mailing back and forth my paper, but then the letters stopped returning altogether. You could have at least called. I don't know how you got your wife to stay in this beastly place. I glared accusingly at him across the table, my arms wrapped around myself for warmth. It was so cold that the glass was frosted inside and out. The gloomy little den felt like it belonged to a wild creature. I couldn't imagine why anyone would live here unless they weren't allowed to be anywhere else.
My wife is always looking out for me. Besides, you were doing fine without me.
Dr. Olsky grunted, not looking up from the steaming wooden mug he clutched in both hands. His white and wispy manicured beard had grown immense and unruly in the months since I'd seen him last at the university. Two planes. Second one was held together by spit and glue, I complained. Robert chuckled and nodded, taking a long drink. I think he had clam chowder in there. Then the bus. Then I had to rent a Jeep and navigate that switchback road that the caribou would have gone around. Do you think I would have gone through all that if I didn't need you?
I didn't ask you to come here.
Dr. Olsky growled, wiping his beard with the back of his arm in a way that I couldn't imagine the dainty professor doing before he left. He looked exactly like the locals now, as much animal as man. But then his dark eyes darted up at me, the same old intelligent twinkle buried deep within the withered and wearied face. Why didn't you come back when you were supposed to? I felt myself growing annoyed at the bitterness in my voice. Here I was, like this was all some grand conspiracy against me, when it was clear Robert had endured some great suffering in the frozen north. You should have had enough time to track every wolf in Alaska by now.
Maybe I've got rabies.
Dr. Olsky chuckled again, the muffled sound slowly fading as his thick eyebrows drew together in a thunderous scowl.
The gray wolves are smarter than I am, though. They can smell when the land is dying and they run from it while humans linger. I don't think there are any wolves left here anymore.
Land is dying? What are you talking about? This place is as far from civilization as you can get. I didn't even know there were forests this thick in North America.
But did you see any animals on your drive?
Dr. Olsky asked. The pleading was in his voice now, his eyes wide and desperate, as his thin neck strained toward me. Well, no, not next to the road.
but did you see any footprints? Any ravens or pure falcons nesting in the branches? Any hunters or fishermen left, or was it just quiet?
Robert's eyes slid away from me, staring over my shoulder and prompting me to turn. A man dressed in gray and white camouflage was watching us from the end of the bar, his face inscrutable behind his round spectacles and bushy mustache.
There's one hunter left,
the man said, standing stiffly and moving to join us at our corner table.
Go home, Hank,
Dr. Olsky said wearily.
You too, Sarah. Go home and leave me be.
He knows where the wolves are going, but he isn't saying,
Hank said, clapping Robert on the shoulder with a meaty hand. The professor tried to lean away, but Hank held on.
Aren't you going to introduce me to your daughter, old man?
He added, grinning in my direction.
Not my daughter. She's one of my students,
Dr. Olsky began.
Coming all the way to visit your ICS? Evening, sweetheart. My name's Hank Saxton, and I'm the closest thing Robert has to a friend up here. He still won't tell me a damn thing about what's happening to this place, though. Ain't that right, buddy?
Robert Olsky just scowled at the hand on his shoulder until it finally dropped away.
Go home,
he repeated softly into his beard.
I won't help you chasing something that doesn't want to be found.
Won't? Or can't?
Hank asked, grinning down at Robert, who stubbornly refused to look at him.
Maybe your student will find what you missed then. Moose, reindeer, brown bears, doll sheep, musk ox. I'll still see them from time to time, although not as many as I used to. The gray wolves, though, this place used to be teeming with them, and I haven't seen one for ages. They aren't just wandering off either. There ain't no tracks leaving this place. What do you say, Sarah? I can show you where the wolf lairs used to be, and maybe you can tell me what's been happening to them.
No!
The clatter of Dr. Olsky's wooden chair spinning to the floor gave me a jolt. He was standing now, mad eyes darting in every direction as though surrounded by invisible foes.
Sarah isn't part of this. I forbid you to stay. Leave this place tonight and tell the university I'm not coming back.
I put too much effort into getting here to give up that easy, I protested. Okay, Hank, you've got yourself a deal. Tomorrow morning, we'll check out the lairs and see what we can find.
That's more like it.
Hank grinned broadly.
Sorry your old man's too embarrassed to admit he can't figure out.
I'm coming too,
Dr. Olsky interrupted fiercely.
Hell of a trouble you get into without me messing with things you don't understand.
What's a hunter like you want the wolves back for anyway? Don't they compete with you for game? I asked Hank as I drove the Jeep the next day. He was sitting up front with me while Robert sat in the back, arms crossed, scowling and muttering to himself.
What's the fun of hunting something that can't fight back?
Hank asked cheerfully.
I'm in it for the sport and the pelt, not the food, and I take no pride in shooting something in the back.
We're going too far,
Robert grumbled behind us.
We should have parked by now.
You lost the right to give directions when you made it clear you stopped caring about finding them,
Hank shot back.
Keep on going, as far as you can, before the trees get too thick.
I pulled off on a side of a trail anyway, trusting Dr. Olsky to know best.
Fine, I don't mind the walk,
Hank said, hopping out of the Jeep.
See the raven watching us?
Dr. Olsky said in a hushed tone. The large black bird was tilting its head from one side to the other, evidently inspecting us from the branches of a nearby spruce tree.
Ravens and wolves often hunt together up here,
Dr. Olsky continued.
They'll lead the pack on the hunt, helping them find prey from the air or flushing them out from the underbrush. Then the wolves will share their victory after they've moved in for the kill. Some ravens will even form close personal friendships with individual wolves, forming pairs that stay together for years on end.
Hank circled around the Jeep to get his long rifle from the trunk. He plodded resolutely through the trees without waiting for us, apparently sure of where he was going. Dr. Olsky didn't follow, though. He was just cocking his head back and forth, watching the raven watch us. Do you think there are wolves around then? I asked nervously. Or do you think the bird is just hanging around where they used to be? The raven leapt off its branch and fluttered into the air briefly before settling back down a little further away.
Hold on, Hank. It looks like we're going this way,
Dr. Olsky called, moving to follow the raven. His voice was sharp and clear in the frosty air. It was loud enough to make me flinch. But Dr. Olsky just smiled patiently.
Don't worry about the wolves finding us. Trust me, they're all gone.
A pack used to have a lair around here.
Hank called back reluctantly through the thick trees. A loud caw resonated from the raven as it fluttered to another tree.
Come on, Hank.
Dr. Olsky repeated.
She says you're not welcome there.
Who says?
Hank asked, pushing through the frosted fern to join us once more. I stared uncertainly at Dr. Olsky, unaccustomed to such cryptic statements from the professor. His eyes were locked on the raven, though, and he would have left us both behind if we didn't follow him. Then he cupped his hands over his mouth, returning the cawing sound toward the raven.
He's a doctor, you say?
Hank asked me. I nodded, shrugging to indicate I was as confused about his behavior as he was. We continued in this manner for some time, the raven always waiting for us to approach before launching off to the next tree. There was snow on the ground, but it wasn't thick enough to make the hiking difficult. More snow filled the branches of the trees, and the farther we went along this trail, the larger and older the trees became. Hank kept quipping that we were going the wrong way, wondering what the point of coming along with us was if we didn't listen to him. I reassured him that I trusted Dr. Olsky, although I must admit, my faith was shaken as the old man continued cawing back at the raven whenever it spoke to us. Presently, the mighty spruce trees began to grow more weak and sickly, with dead branches replacing the thick green ones behind us. The undergrowth around us was growing thin and dry as well, and this trend continued as we progressed until nothing but dead trees with thin skeletal branches grasped toward the pale yellow sun. Is this what you meant by the land dying? I asked Dr. Olsky. He turned away from the raven we were following and stared me straight in the face. His neck quivered as though he was about to speak, but no sound came out. Curiously, he cocked his head to the side, just as the bird had done. And then a squawking, croaking caw emerged from his throat. Nodding to himself as though satisfied with that answer, he turned away from me again to hurry after the raven. I was beginning to consider changing my vote of confidence and asking Hank to lead instead, when I saw small shapes flitting through the trees in the distance. Weary of the dead landscape and encouraged by any sign of life, I pushed ahead through the dry underbrush to try and identify the creatures. The raven overhead began to caw again. Or maybe it was Olsky. I can't be sure. But I was getting tired of both of them and pressed on. I didn't stop until I saw a rustle in the bushes directly ahead of me. The sight so close knocked me back into reality, reminding me how deep into the Alaskan wilderness I really was. I started scrambling back toward the others at once, but not before the dry brush parted to reveal the largest, most grizzled gray wolf I had ever seen in my life. Its fur was matted and smeared with ancient blood. Yellow eyes bore through me with a ferocious intensity, and the parted mouth bristled with fangs as long as my fingers. The skin above its nose drew back into a snarl, and the creature leapt forward with such a grace, deadly purpose that I knew instantly it would be impossible to run. I felt my body collapse into a quivering heap without the strength to defend myself or resist in the slightest. Then a gunshot broke the air, so close and so loud that I threw myself to the ground and instinctively covered my head with my hands.
Sarah, move!
Dr. Olsky shouted above me. Rough hands grasped me under my arms and hurled me to my feet, hauling me back toward where Hank was lying on the ground with his long gun. More dark shapes darting through the trees. I counted at least four as we huddled together and watched them circle us.
Give him another warning shot,
Dr. Olsky said firmly.
Don't try to hit one, just give him a good scare.
First shot wasn't a warning shot,
Hank grunted.
Well, you missed then,
Dr. Olsky snapped. I thought he must be right, because the large wolf was still standing exactly where I first saw it, its face still warped into a feral snarl. Then the wolf began to advance, and as it moved, I clearly saw the devastating impact where the bullet had entered its body near the shoulder. instead of bleeding. The wound looked more like someone sank a pickaxe into the ice, exploding open a hole, bristling with shards of frozen blood and bone. Another gunshot, but the creature didn't budge. Then I realized that Hank had fired at a second wolf, which is running along our flank. An explosion of broken shards lanced through the air, catching and spinning the light in hundreds of directions as the creature sprinted past. In the brief silence that followed, I realized no sound emerged, even from the first snarling wolf still advancing toward us. No whimper of pain, no predatory howl. The deadly emptiness was only broken by the cawing of the raven overhead. Long, raucous notes echoing through the static movement that never seemed to end. All at once, the wolves turned and fled back through the dead forest. Hank took another shot at one of them when it first began to sprint, but he didn't fire again when it was clear they were all running away. Hank was the first of us to rise after it seemed like they were gone, and he swiftly strode through the trees to where the second wolf had been flanking us. "Dr. Olsky," I whispered, barely trusting myself to breathe. "Those are the missing wolves, aren't they? What aren't you telling us?" The professor looked me in the eye again, and that horrible cawing sound, rising in his throat, made me start to violently tremble in a way that I hadn't even done when the wolf was snarling at me. A moment later, Hank returned, holding his long gun in one hand, the other holding up a bristling furry tail over 2 feet long. He threw the tail down at our feet, and I reeled back from the rancid odor.
"Rotten through," Hank said. "That was not as bad as it would have been without the cold. That animal has been dead for a long time."
Dr. Olsky quietly rose, scanning the branches until he found the raven once more. Then, without a word, the old man began to jog after the bird, which promptly took flight as though begging us to follow.
"We're going back to town,"
Hank said, his voice trembling slightly. "I'm not leaving Dr. Olsky out here, and I've got the keys," I replied, hurrying to catch up with the professor through the dead trees.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
I could take the cold. I could take the nauseating stench of rotten meat from the thawing wolf tail slung over my shoulder. I could take the silent isolation of the forest and the numbing fear of the impossible creatures that had attacked us.
"This was a mistake. We don't belong here,"
Dr. Olsky said. What I couldn't take: the hopeless surrender in the professor's voice. Hands on his knees, panting great clouds of frozen breath, the old man stared up at the raven, which leered down at us from nearby branches.
"What fools we were to think we could understand the secrets of life,"
Dr. Olsky continued to stare at the bird, not turning as Hank and I caught up with him beside the frozen pond he'd stopped beside.
"You want to know why I never returned to the university? There's your answer. I used to think that life was an intricate machine, a complex game that one could learn the rules to, but what point is there in applying reason to that which defies it? Why bother to study what man was not meant to comprehend?"
"You led us away from the caves on purpose, didn't you?" I asked. "Is this what you were afraid we'd find?" Dr. Olsky nodded uncertainly, although I detected a sense of hesitation, as though there was more he wished to say, if only he could overpower his own dread to do so.
"Keys, Missy,"
Hank said, his voice cracking around the edges.
"We'll never be able to think this through knowing those creatures are out there watching us. Let's all get back to the bar and have another drink and see if we can't learn anything from that tale."
"I want to see the caves," I protested. "And what about the raven? Don't you think it's trying to tell us something?"
"She already showed us her intentions when she lured us into her trap,"
Dr. Olsky dismissed.
"Hank is right. We should all leave these woods and never return."
He placed his hands on the small of his back and stretched before turning to trudge through the snow the way we came. I didn't like that we were giving up that easily, but I was excited to examine the rotten tail. On the way back to town, I voiced a range of tentative hypotheses to the professor, ranging from skin-eating bacteria to pain-blocking mutations, or even chemical reactions to some sort of environmental waste. I mean, no one really thinks the wolves were dead, right? I said, unable to hide the pleading tone from my voice. Hank insisted on driving this time, and Dr. Olsky in the passenger seat didn't reply. He was slouched low, watching the raven swooping above the graveyard of trees as it followed us down the winding road. The pervading silence, which greeted our entry to town, made me feel like we never left the forest. There wasn't a single other car on the road, and I didn't see any lights on inside the houses despite the dark rolling clouds, which made the midday noon feel like twilight. I've never seen it so dark during the day, I commented.
Expecting a storm, I reckon,
Hank said, shifting uncomfortably in his seat.
We have to generate our own electricity up here, so don't be surprised. No one is wasting our diesel early.
I'm not bothered by the dark, I lied. So how about that drink, then? First round is on me, as thanks for taking me out there.
Second round is on you, too, for getting your ass saved from the wolves.
Hank laughed. The sound couldn't persist in the frozen air, breaking and falling away into an uneasy silence.
The raven is still following us.
Dr. Olsky grunted. He was slouched down in his seat so he could get a better angle at the sky.
Well, then it knows where to find us at the pub, but that don't mean it's getting any.
Hank forced a broad grin, glancing at me from the corner of his eye. It felt like he was looking for reassurance, which felt ridiculous, especially since I had none to give. There were lights on inside the bar, though, and I was beginning to feel better as we were pulling into the parking lot. I was looking forward to some hot chowder and maybe a whiskey to relax, and all my scientific hypotheses for what we'd seen that day were starting to run through my mind again. The events of that morning were already beginning to feel like a bad dream, to the point where I almost found myself laughing when I jumped out of the Jeep to charge up the steps to the pub. I didn't make it two steps before I glimpsed the shadow prowling around the edge of the building. The monstrous shape looked almost like a horse at first, but the matted fur, frozen into clumps and spikes, left no doubt. The wolf and I stared at each other, neither making a move. I was the first to make a sound. Get back in the Jeep, I whispered with all the breath I could muster.
Not before I get myself a big mug of...
Hank's voice stopped abruptly. He must have seen it too. Slowly, cautiously, I opened the car door and slipped back inside. The wolf turned its head to watch me, and I could see a great hollow place in the side of its neck, where all the flesh had been torn away from some ancient wound. Its white spinal cord was clearly visible, glinting in the light from the window.
Two more,
Dr. Olsky said softly.
Either end of the street. Start driving.
Where?
Hank asked. The gigantic creature, lurking around the pub wall, turned away from us to peer inside a window. It didn't even need to get onto its hind legs to be able to look inside. Then it turned toward us once more, settling into a crouch in preparation to spring.
Doesn't matter. Just go,
Dr. Olsky snapped. The Jeep roared to life, churning through the snow as it spun out of the parking lot. The wolf behind us sprang into action immediately, launching from its crouch to fly down the road at a terrifying pace. The wolves at the end of the street turned like clockwork, racing between the houses to flank us on either side. I watched the speedometer in disbelief as we approached 40 miles per hour, as the wolves continued to keep pace with us. The Jeep was skidding back and forth on icy roads, and it didn't seem like we could go much faster without losing control of the vehicle. The thought of the ice spinning us off the road into a ditch, helplessly trapped, while the monsters closed in from every side, was too much to bear. My heart felt like it was beating out of my chest, but my blood ran cold when Dr. Olsky shouted,
Stop the car! Are you out of your damn mind?
Hank shouted back. The sound reverberated in the enclosed space. But I don't think I could have heard anything spoken more quietly over the sound of the engine, the skidding tires, and my own pounding blood.
Two people!
Dr. Olsky replied, pounding on his window hard enough to make it rattle in its frame.
We can't leave them out there.
Sure enough, an elderly man and woman in large overcoats were both standing on one of the dark street corners. They were huddled together as though for warmth, seemingly oblivious to the wolves racing to catch up with us.
Not stopping,
Hank shot back.
Not for 100 miles.
Dr. Olsky reached over and smashed the horn, blaring at the couple as we roared past. They didn't even flinch, though, barely moving a muscle as they turned to follow us with their gaze. Maybe they're frozen, I began. But the words caught in my throat as the wolves came barreling toward them. I opened one of the windows despite the cold, sticking my head out to watch behind us. I shouted to them in warning, but I might as well have been speaking another language. In a moment, the animals would be on top of them. But the couple just kept looking after us as though the racing wolves weren't even worth a moment of their attention. The monstrous wolf with its open spine was the first to reach them. It smashed between the couples in its single-minded pursuit of our car. The people swayed out of the way, never once taking their eyes off of us, as the wolf bound on, unceasing and untiring. More people were coming out of the dark houses now to line the street and watch us pass. Some were bundled against the cold, others in bathrobes, or even minimally dressed in undergarments despite the frozen air. More wolves had joined in the hunt as well, slinking between the houses or watching us from behind snowy banks with eager and unified fascination.
They don't mind the cold, don't mind the wolves, girl. What happened to this place while we were gone?
It's like they don't even see them, I agreed, equally mystified. I rolled up my window against the cold, just as the professor was rolling his down to stick his head out the window. Dr. Olsky, what are you doing?
The raven. She's still overhead, but she's heading back towards the woods now. I think we should follow her this time, Hank. I think we should let her lead us to the lair.
A long, low howl began to rise from the houses behind us, rapidly spreading and being taken up ahead. The sound chilled me to my core. It might have actually been a relief if it were the ghostly animals who finally made a sound. But heads thrown back, staring into the dark sky as the snow began to fall around them. It was the men and women of the town lining the street, who were all howling with one chilling voice.
Bloody hell,
Hank said, his voice somewhere between terror and reverence.
What fool I was,
Dr. Olsky reiterated.
To think blind ignorance would be enough to shield us from what haunts this place.
Hardly a word was spoken between us as we wound through the icy mountain road once more. Hank drove with grim determination, while Dr. Olsky made one phone call after another from the back seat. I didn't need to ask to know he was trying to call people he knew from town. The first three attempts only found an answering machine, while the fourth picked up to a guttural, snarling reply, like something halfway between a man and a wolf. We all listened to the halting, growling words, which were not words for a few seconds, before Dr. Olsky ended the call. He did not make a fifth attempt. Is your wife all right? I asked, dreading the answer. Then hurriedly, at least the wolves weren't attacking people.
That's because there's no people left to attack,
Dr. Olsky replied somberly.
Whatever is happening to the wolves is happening to the people, too.
You're not saying they're all dead, are you?
Hank asked, his eyes alternating between the road and the raven flying overhead.
They're moving, aren't they? I don't think we'll make any sense of this phenomenon while still clinging to such primitive superstitions as life and death. They become something else entirely.
We could just keep driving, I ventured meekly. Never look back, never speak of it. Or we could call for help. And maybe they could send in the National Guard or something. But Dr. Olsky was shaking his head.
It was one thing when it was just the wolves, but it's spreading. Do you want to see what it's like for a host of armed men to start howling like the devil? Now the raven is looking out for us. She'll show us what we need to know, and then we can decide from there.
The storm was growing fiercer by the time the raven stopped. The wind was enough to whip the snow diagonally across the mountain slope. And the dead branches of the looming trees did nothing to protect us from the elements. The raven huddled against a trunk to shield from the wind, croaking feebly with exhaustion as we cautiously exited the jeep.
Thank you, love. You kept us safe,
Dr. Olsky said to the bird, but his words dispersed by the wind into the gathering night. And then he cupped his hands and cawed at it, a long, harsh sound that set my teeth on edge. The raven launched from the branch at once to settle near a small indentation in the snow on the ground. Why do you keep doing that? I asked, though I was afraid to speculate the reason. I was almost relieved when Dr. Olsky didn't answer, and instead, stomped his way to the indentation in the snow where he began to sweep the heel of his boot to clear the ice and snow. A small opening began to form by the time Hank and I joined him. I looked around for the raven, but the bird was nowhere to be seen, amidst the spinning eddies of snow. Then glancing back, just in time to see the old professor down on his hands and knees, and then flat onto his stomach as he crawled his way into the narrow opening he had made in the ground. Hank clutched his rifle to his chest as he dropped to the ground to crawl after him. I knew I had no choice but to follow. Once I got past the initial claustrophobia of the small opening, it felt good to know that the route was too narrow for one of the monstrous wolves to follow us without a good deal of digging. The air was rapidly growing warmer as well. And soon, the space began to open wider as the ice and snow around us gave way to rock and frozen mud. Hank turned on a flashlight up ahead that he was holding with his teeth, and every once in a while he'd glance back to check on me. The next flash of light startled me when it revealed the rock had seamlessly given way to a clean white tiling, like one might find in a hotel bathroom. The space widened considerably after that, and soon three of us were able to comfortably stand in the widening cave.
This is no lair,
Hank spoke first, his voice cracking from the strain. I stared incredulously at the padded armchair in the corner of the room, at the walls lined with shelves, stuffed with musty leather-bound books, cramming the place from floor to ceiling. Dr. Olsky strode across the room to the lamp beside the chair, and turning it on, revealed the extent of the comfortable study. There was a large wooden desk on the opposite end, its surface cluttered with glass jars, where floating jawbones, eyes, and other drifting organs were suspended in a thick, yellowish fluid. Some looked like they belonged to animals, while others looked disturbingly familiar to those I encountered within human cadavers during my own studies.
I told you I never intended you to come here, Sarah,
Dr. Olsky said as he crossed the room to sit in the wooden chair behind the desk.
I told you not to search for the lair, but you've taken after me too strongly, never knowing when you've gone too far.
Scratching, pawing, and sniffing behind us, the way we crawled in. Had the wolves found us already? I saw Hank tense as he heard it as well, and he instinctively swung his rifle toward the sound. Then readjusting, he pointed the gun at Dr. Olsky.
You've been hiding too much, old man,
the hunter growled.
What do you know about this place?
I know that the wolves really did live here once,
Dr. Olsky mused, lowering himself to stare into one of the glass jars containing the lower half of a jaw. The teeth were too large and too pointed to be human, but neither were they of sufficient length to belong to a wolf.
I never intended for them to end up like this, though,
the professor continued with resignation.
I thought I could keep them alive as I flayed one nerve, one muscle, one layer of tissue at a time until I found the line between life and death, or replacing one tissue with another, subtly changing one living form to another.
The scratching was growing closer outside, then a howl, low and throaty. Although whether it came from a man or a beast, I could not tell.
But the university kept calling for me to return, and my research was going too slowly. I thought I could hasten my results by inserting a virus to automate some of my slowest alterations. I never thought it was possible for the humans to begin to change. For my wife.
Call them off!
Hank pleaded, his rifle swaying between Dr. Olsky and the entrance we crawled through.
Give them the antidote! Whatever it is! Make it stop!
But Dr. Olsky only shook his head, a wistful smile tugging at the corners of his white beard.
You too have eaten the meat and dwelled amidst the cursed. I see you shaking already. Do not fight the transformation. The end is nothing to be feared when the distinction between life and death has been destroyed.
The frozen ground leading into the lair collapsed from the digging in a rush of snow and bitter wind. The gun went off, the reverberating blast magnifying in the enclosed space so that its echoes merged with unearthly howl. The bullet pulverized the jaw of the wolf that made it through first, but its cold yellow eyes never blinked as it continued its lunge.
Don't fight them!
Dr. Olsky shouted, the tension in his voice making it sound almost like the cawing of the ravens once more.
They are your brothers!
Paws and hands, side by side, clawing the earth as the wolves and humans from town swarmed into the small chamber. Clamoring over each other on all fours, the matted fur and filthy winter coats really did seem to flow together. One creature no different than the next. The howls rose in their throats, the timbers weaving and merging into one. The blasphemous ensemble of the living dead. The gun went off again, and this time it was the professor who staggered back against the wall. He stared down at the bullet in his stomach, gingerly lifting his shirt to inspect the damage. The small, neat hole was wedged between two of his ribs, spreading a network of cracks through his body, as though he was made of ice. Revealed, too, was the thick patches of fur and twisted feathers, which covered most of the professor's body.
Death has become us!
Dr. Olsky howled with a maniacal glee.
Do not fight your nature!
There was nothing I could do but press myself to the shelves of books and close my eyes, to bear the wave of howls and screams, belonging to neither man nor beast, the living nor the dead. The frozen bodies piling into the room brought no heat, but rather seemed to drain it from the place until everything, even my thoughts, had grown numb. And then, in the pit of my misery and despair, a sound unlike the others broke through the maddening fray. The croaking, cawing of the raven, untainted by the deforming influence, pure and natural and insistent. The cawing continued as the maelstrom grew still around me. When at last I found the courage to open my eyes, I saw the broken and bloody stump of a tail disappearing back up the tunnel. The clean white tiles were ruined with filth and blood, but the den was otherwise empty. Both Hank and Dr. Olsky must have followed the pack back to the surface. Slowly, carefully, as though afraid each movement would cause my body to shatter, I followed them through the tunnel, into the stillness of the waiting night. The wind had stopped, though the snow was falling harder now. I heard the cawing of the raven again, this time farther off. Then the answer cry of the howls as that monstrous pack of animals followed the bird's lead. I don't know for sure, but I think the bird must have been Mr. Olsky's wife, doing all she could to bring me to this place where I might set things right. I stood there a long time, watching the snow fill our tracks, then retreating back into the profane lair. I let the snow conceal the entrance and seal me away from the world I dare not return to. How could I risk ever going back to civilization, knowing I could spread the curse with me wherever I went? Let the unnatural pack prowl through the dead trees. Let them wander until the wind and the snow grinds them into dust. I will stay. I will study, hoping that one day I find the secrets that have eluded my professor and reverse the changes. Or learning not to spend forever here, between life and death, my eternal curse to be the ignorance of their difference.
That was The Wolf and the Raven by Tobias Wade, as performed by Danielle Hewitt and featuring Kevin Barbary and yours truly, Steve Taylor. I suspect you'll all agree that that was a haunting reminder that the wilderness can be as unpredictable and as unforgiving as the human soul. Thanks again to Mr. Wade for supplying tonight's second terrifying tale. If you enjoyed that story, you can find more of the Amazon best-selling author's thriller, suspense, mystery, and horror short stories at tobiaswade.com. That's Tobias, spelled T-O-B-I-A-S, Wade, spelled W-A-D-E.com. Wade is a former neuroscience researcher and self-proclaimed born-again novelist. During his studies, he says it struck him as odd that he could learn so much about behavior without understanding the intricacies of human nature. He claims he realized that he learned more about what it means to be human from reading stories than he ever had from textbooks, and was inspired to write. Now, if that's not an origin story, I don't know what is. Again, you can find Tobias over on X, formerly Twitter, and on Amazon, as well as at tobiaswade.com. Thanks again for your support of indie horror authors. Well, that about does it for tonight. Before we go, I'd like to thank you once again for joining us for tonight for this unsettling journey into the shadows. Remember, you can help support Chilling Tales for Dark Nights by leaving us a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening. And if you're tuning in on YouTube, don't forget to give us a thumbs up, leave a comment, and hit that subscribe button and bell icon to stay updated on all of our latest releases. If tonight's tales of closet conspiracies and supernatural wolves left you wanting more, visit ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com to become a patron and enjoy all of our content ad-free for as little as $7.99 per month, or even less with an annual subscription. You'll get exclusive access to all of our weekly podcasts. Every penny goes toward keeping the nightmares alive and bringing you more bone-chilling stories each week. I'm your host, Steve Taylor, and as always, it's been a pleasure. Don't forget to tune in every Monday and Wednesday for more harrowing tales, where we'll once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Until then, sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better, and that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.